kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
It's just me now. Like, I don't have a co-host anymore.
Okay. Well, I can deal with that.
Everyone's bailed on me.
More of you for me. That's what
Oh, you.
You know how I am.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Fun show. Later on in the episode, Jeff Ball, musician Jeff Ball, is going to be joining the show to chat with me. But we are kicking things off with not one, but two of my favorite guys, Chris Taylor, Pernell Vaughn. How are you fellas doing today?
Hello.
Hi, tryptophan, coma, regularity here. I've been eating turkey day after day after day. It's a wonder I'm even on right now.
Are you in a food coma right now?
Yeah, I'm sleep reviewing.
Nice, that works. So
get it done, man.
So yeah, we're gonna lead the show off with a handful of Switch reviews, a Switch apocalypse, I think Pernell you called it.
Mm-hmm. Nintendo wants to become a Switch tatership.
Switch tatership.
Ooh, very good.
You guys are terrible. But we're going to start off with the game Portal Knights, developed by Keen Games, published by 505 Games. This one released November 23rd on the Switch for $29.99. Leave the familiar world behind and step into the fantastic unknown with Portal Knights, a cooperative 3D sandbox action RPG. Level up your character and craft powerful gear to defeat your enemies in real-time tactical combat. Craft your adventure, forge your hero, become the ultimate Portal Knight. Both of you guys are joining me on the review with this one. So I covered this back on the Xbox. I loved it. I was happy to dive back into it with both of you. What did you guys think of this? Who wants to lead off?
I guess I could do it. It could be fun. I'm nervous, guys. I'm nervous. But first time.
I believe in you.
Do it, man. You can do it.
I believe. Let's knock this out. So Portal Knights. Well, coming into Portal Knights, I had already had experience with two similar games to this style. Of course, the obvious one being Minecraft.
Never heard of it.
No.
Who has, right? I mean, I feel like I just had it going over from a fever dream. But there's that. And then there's another game known as Dragon Quest Builders, which was a take on Minecraft, with the intent being, you know, now it's more about building. Like, basically Minecraft with a story. So Portal Knights is a similar game where it's, you know, Minecraft with a story. But it's a lighter fare than something like Dragon Quest. And it also brings a different concept in the form of the portals themselves. So when you start out a game, you choose one of your three main classes, the warrior, the mage, or the archer, and then you proceed to explore procedurally generated maps. And each actual map has specific criteria that's always going to be like a certain set of crops or a certain set of monster types, things of that nature. And your goal is to ultimately boost your skills to what you feel would be an optimal level, then craft what would be considered as portal tubes to open up a portal to the next environment. But unlike what I recall from Dragon Quest, whereas Dragon Quest is kind of broken up into different chapters, that you go kind of in sequence on each map until you're done the chapter, this game is sort of a giant map that interlocks multiple portal regions. So it's kind of cool how you can, like, say, go to a place and there might be, like, two jutting out locations that you can get to, which means you got to find and unlock two different portals if you want to reach them. And as each different portal environment becomes progressively tougher, you kind of have to be mindful of just how far, like how fast do you want to progress. Though another thing about that I came to appreciate was the fact that even though the game can get tough, they designed it with more of the casual sense in mind, which is that the penalty for failure is not massive. It just kind of sets you back to the starting region or the starting landing point. You go again. And you can always, like, say, if you dig yourself into a hole, which I've done in, like, Dragon Quest more than a few times, you simply just go to the menu options, select the button, and boom, you're warped right back to the main launching pad for the start of the level. It's convenient, it's easy, and it makes it so that you feel comfortable with exploring to your heart's content, mindlessly having fun.
I mean, there is a minor penalty when you die. You do lose a little bit of money. It's not much. Chris, you said you lost, what, 4 gold earlier today?
Yeah, it seemed like it was different amounts.
I think it's like 5%.
I was going to say, maybe it's scaled with the amount of, with the stupidity level of your death.
I think it's a percentage of your money. Although, yeah. that would be really funny if they're like, oh, you died to a boss? Well, okay, we'll dock you half your gold because, you know, you lost in a valiant battle and you have to go and earn it back. Oh, you walked off a cliff and died? You're a moron. We'll take 3 gold from you.
Exactly.
It would almost be the other opposite for me if I designed it. It's like, you walked off a cliff? How dumb are you? You deserve no money. You're poverty.
You owe us money now.
You're in debt. It'd be perfect.
That'd be a shitty microtransaction in a game.
Ooh.
Take that, EA. Oh, wait, don't listen to that, EA. Don't listen to that.
There's all this talk about how microtransactions in games are like, it's just the same as before, because before you had arcade games and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, the business model for arcade microtransactions was real shitty. It's like, pay 25 cents for every time you get a game over. It's like, that's kind of how that works, right?
Yeah.
In the logic of microtransactions, that's actually exactly how it works. That's actually pretty funny. It's like, crap. What a terrible penalty for failure. I got to give them more money to have fun. This is stupid.
See, well, I guess arcade games would be classified more along the lines of like free-to-play mobile games, because there's no entry cost except for, you know, that 25 cents to start. But every time you want to play, it costs the money, where, you know, Star Wars Battlefront is still $60, and then it's nickel and dime, nickel and dime, nickel and dime.
Yeah.
What? I almost feel like that optimally more so describes games like there's that freaking Golden Tee or something like that. Because those games, like, you get an 18-hole course, and you put in your money, and even if you're doing well on the course, the game will still go, hey, do you want those last 12 holes? Kind of popping $5, chump. Like, that is the true, like, what are you kidding me? I've actually been under par this entire time. We don't care. We want money. And people pay it too. They're gluttons for it.
They do. How is it that everything devolves back to microtransactions anymore?
Because golden transactions are the future, the present, and some of the past.
True. Well, thankfully, Portal Knights doesn't really seem to have any kind of microtransactions. It's you pay the money and you get to play it. And Chris, what were your thoughts with the game? We just heard from Purnell. What are your thoughts?
I really liked it. I liked the, I like that it gives you kind of like a choice of different skill sets that you can, like, you can be a knight, an archer, or a mage, so you're not just, you know, the same doofus with a sword every time. Also makes it really cool for if you happen to be playing with other people, except in our case where we had both chosen archer. So
no one to soak up the damage?
Nope. No. Which, you know, I never played as a knight, so I have yet to soak up any damage in a meaningful way. but no, I do like that aspect of it. I really like that one thing that we did is that there was, like, a merchant on a level, so we got to make that kind of, like, our home base, so we could always go back there and, like, sell off excess stuff, and, you know, I like the... It's interesting because, well, I mean, this isn't just because I've been obsessively playing it lately, but it does remind me of, like, Elder Scrolls type stuff, you know? Like, collecting things and selling them off and, like, you know, kind of building in that way, too, as well as physically building, you know, structures.
Yeah, and a lot less hand-holding and guidance than a lot of games like this. It's pretty much... It runs you through the tutorial island, and then after that, it's like, go do your thing. You know what to do. Now just go do it.
Yeah, it was a...
Sucker.
I was surprised after I thought I had done everything that there was still more to do, and then I could also just keep building on top of things, you know? Like, I don't know. I quite enjoyed that.
Indeed. Now, the big question here is on the Switch... The game is $30, which we seem to run into this a lot with Switch games. On other platforms, Portal Knights is $20.
I guess people really want to put it as a Nintendo tax.
Yeah, it has the Switch tax, and I believe that part of that is because a physical version is going to be coming out, and that might be, you know, the whole shit where games have to have the same price physical and digital, or, like, GameStop will get all bitchy and be like, eh, we're not going to carry your game.
Exactly.
That's what
like
they sound like too.
They do.
Exactly like that.
All my friends at GameStop talk the same way. Welcome to GameStop.
I think they should make them take a pill or something that just kind of distorts your like vocal cords or something. It's like lemon. But like, as far as that price tag goes, it's an interesting conundrum that you face there, because it's like, on one hand, you said like, you know, it's $10 less on every other system, but there's also like a certain value to the 10 if you look at it that way, which is that portability, depending on the type of gamer you are, is worth its weight in gold. Like, I was playing it at Thanksgiving dinner. I played it at Friendsgiving dinner. Mm-hmm. I could play it on the bus. Like, for me, a lot of times that difference in being able to play it wherever I want versus having to play it at home when I'm not at work on lunch break, or pretty much only during that sweet period of time where I'm actually at home on the couch with nothing to do. Like, there's a certain benefit to being able to say, you know, I can just play this home or at work. I'm fine with it. And not to mention the fact that if you are a Switch owner and you say, for example, don't have a PS4, that means not only do you not have access to, or that's, the things might have been on, I was on a PS4 in this case, but Portalize was on the Xbox One and PS4. So you wouldn't have access to the previous version of this game. And if you don't have the PS4, you don't have access to Dragon Quest Builders either, which means on the Switch, not only is this already a good game on every system it's on, but on the Switch, this is your best option to get this style of gameplay. So, to me, that $30 is definitely a valid purchase value, and there's a lot going on in the game, so you'll get your money's worth in content.
Yeah, I think the other aspect, as far as, like, if you're looking at other platforms, when it's online capable, it's like, what are all your friends going to be playing this on? So,
true.
If everybody picks it up on Switch, then obviously you're going to want to go Switch on that. And yeah, I think the portability is definitely probably the best aspect of it. I mean, that's it's the best reason to pay $60 for a copy of Skyrim right now.
Very, very true. And then something else cool with the Switch version, we're talking about portability. You can still play two-player locally on one Switch portable.
Oh, really? There you go.
You can split screen on that.
That's awesome.
Pretty cool. And then not only that, but they have local play, so you could connect Switch to Switch, and if you had two Switches and four people, you can do four-player gameplay
with
offline.
Two copies of the game. Yeah,
well, there you go.
That means lower cost of entry for four-player activity.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that's multi-cart, right? Like, everybody has to have the game?
Well, if you had two Switches, you would need two copies of the game, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
But it still sounds better than four copies for four players if that came down to it.
Indeed. I mean, granted, it's no Mario Kart having eight players with one cartridge, but, you know, you can't expect that from everything.
Yeah, what is that aside from Mario Kart? That's a league of its own.
And then performance-wise, I do want to say clearly this isn't going to stack up to the Xbox One version of the game. You can't expect that. Even docked, it's not as crisp and as fluid as the Xbox version of the game. In handheld mode, when I first started playing, everything looked a little bit on the cluttered side, but after like 10 minutes or so, I fully adapted to it, and I thought it looked and played great. I had maybe one or two very minor instances of slowdown when things were getting kind of hectic on the screen. And then the other goofy thing I noticed is that I don't know if it's my memory card that I'm using. I think I have an older SD micro card on my system. The game was significantly faster when I deleted it and then reinstalled it directly on the system.
Oh, okay. Hmm.
That's what you did have that combo with me. We had, because I was loading up faster than you on my map.
You were loading up a hell of a lot faster than me. So in between when I played with you, Purnell, and when I played with you, Chris, I popped out the memory card and reinstalled the game directly to the system, and it felt like night and day. So I don't know if my memory card's the issue or if it's an issue with the Switch just reading slower off of memory cards, but that's something to keep in mind as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So,
but as far as I'm concerned, this is worth that 30 bones.
I was going to say, overall, $30. What are your verdicts?
I kind of did it twice already, so at this point, my opinion is overdone.
Enough of your shit for now.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I'd say get it, especially if you can find people to play it with, because that was pretty cool.
Indeed, it is so much more fun in a group setting as well. So I need to get back into the game again. We'll have to try organizing like a big group session one of these days.
There you go.
I like the sound of that.
Indeed. But next game to talk about is called Aces of the Luftwaffe Squadron, developed and published by Handy Games, released November 17th on the Switch for $14.99. When Europe seemed to be freed, a secret German commando called the Aces of the Luftwaffe took their chance to strike back and invade the USA. It's your duty to restore peace and liberty by climbing aboard deadly wings of steel and fight against their fearsome war machines in bombastic air battles, experience an epic storyline, and survive the bullet hail above U.S. coasts and cities. Command your wingmen, fight as a team, fight as a squadron. Chris Taylor, did you fight as a squadron?
Yes, the game kind of forces you to do that, so that, it was not just an imperative, it was a description of the reality of the situation.
So okay, what is this game?
This game, Aces of the Luftwaffe, I don't know. I'm bad at German.
Me too. I still want to call it Luftwaffle.
Exactly.
There's no the second Luftwaffle. L there, but I want to call it Luftwaffle.
it's Luftwaffle. Because you lift the waffle. Anyways, okay, so this game is, to all appearances, a just kind of classic vertically scrolling shoot 'em up, like a shmup. Like your
shmup.
Like your Ride and Trods and your, I don't know, Imperium, Strike Gunner, STGs, all that good stuff. I'm sure there's other noteworthy examples, but basically, screen scrolling upwards, and you know, you move around and you know, shoot enemies, dodge bullets. Enemies come at you, of course, in droves. The bullets come at you in, you know, a nice patterned rain of bullets, and you know, the bosses are big and nasty, take up the whole screen, and you know, they shoot in those patterns that you gotta like be able to dodge between and like, you know, shoot things and save the day. So what this game does a little bit differently is that, for one, it introduces a storyline with, like, all kinds of... So it's kind of a little bit like Star Fox in this way. So all the storyline takes place within the action of the levels. Your characters interact with each other, and they kind of, like, you know, talk through the situations, and then it gets into the action, but, you know, everybody's just communicating between the planes. So you're not really seeing, like, a... Somebody's just leaning on a car horn outside. It's fun. That was dumb. Yeah.
That could be the car crying.
Yeah, exactly. That was funny. So, yeah, so, like, your characters talk amongst themselves, and, like, that, you know, establishes part of the story. You know, they talk to bad guys and things like that. So you've got storyline element to this shooter. Which is already kind of unusual. You have a leveling up system, which is kind of a new one for me. I've never really seen that in a, like, I've seen it in a couple of other shooters in certain ways, but this one just straight up, like, as you gain levels, you unlock skills on a skill tree. So very, like, RPG-like in that sense. And when you unlock these skills, it just changes the way that your four different, you know, airplanes fight and all this other stuff. And, you know, you've got four different characters, each one with a unique personality, although they do all sound like they were voiced by the same one or two German people.
Might have been.
Yeah. And, yeah, so, like, you also have the ability after the first... a full chapter, that is, say each chapter is divided into five stages, four regular stages, and then the fifth one's kind of a boss battle. And after that, you start unlocking other ships. So it looks like there's another layer of customization, is that you can sort of assign a ship to a different character or something like that. And then finally, there's one other aspect that was like kind of unusual to me, is that each level has a has kind of a scripted event where one of your characters kind of goes off the rails in some way, and you have to not only fight off the enemies but also keep them covered. So you've got your one character who like flies into a rage and like starts shooting after everything, so you kind of have to keep the other enemies off of him because obviously what he's doing is not strategically sound. One character apparently has vertigo or some kind of acrophobia. So they just get woozy in their own airplane, and that I was like, okay.
I'm scared of flying, man. Why the fuck are you a pilot?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, I can't fly anymore for 30 seconds. Keep everybody off of me. That's not even the worst one. The worst one is that the main character is... Okay, so I guess his beef with the Germans is that they poisoned him and his parents. And his parents died and he survived. But apparently he still has the poison in him somehow. So he randomly gets really sick, and you can't, like, move your ship too fast, or else it, I guess, jostles him or something, I don't know. That's probably the most annoying one, and it happens first, so...
Oh, it sounds like that's just a bullshit excuse for motion sickness.
Yeah, it acts like motion sickness. It's basically saying, your character is poisoned, you have to slow down.
So good career.
Geriatric health concern pilots.
Yeah, exactly. So... You know, they've all got different... the last character is narcoleptic. So.
I hope the last skill on these skill trees is the cure to their damn problems. This is ridiculous.
Now, narcoleptic pilot. What
the? He's a narcoleptic pilot, it's true. Yeah, it's like, it's kind of this thing, and it's, like I said, it's scripted, so it happens at certain points and certain levels, so it's not something that's just going to throw you off. It's just a strange quirk to this game. But yeah, apart from that, like I said, it's solid. As far as when you're playing a shoot 'em up, it's like the thing that you look for is how well does the ship control, you know, how comfortable do you feel playing this game? And I mean, for being a download game, this does feel like a really good shooter. I would probably compare it to something like in the Nano Stray series, Poppin Twinbee, something like that.
Oh, nice.
It feels a little bit like that. Like, it's not crystal clear, precise control like a cave shooter, like a Mushihime-sama or like a Espagluta or whatever those crazy named games are. It's not one of those where it's like you're dodging like a veritable like sea of bullets, and like there's only one little spot that you have to go to and like, you know, dodge forever. But it does actually, it gets intense. It has some really intense like filling the screen with bullet moments. So for that reason, I think any vertical shooter fan is going to find something to like in this game. Cool. Like I said, it's just got, it's mostly one that leans on the extras.
I'm in for the narcolepsy.
Nice. So $15 would... what is your...
Oh, the poison, that poison.
what is your official verdict for $15 on the Luft Waffles?
Go ahead and get it. I mean, like, the only way you're going to get as good of an experience is downloading the old Neo Geo games, you know? Like your Aero Fighters 2 or whatever.
Nice. Sounds good. And I love... Like I said, I love Handy Games. I love their games anyway, so I'm excited to check this one out.
Yeah, this one's got a super good amount of replay value because you can still gain levels by replaying levels. So if you can actually grind in this game in a vertical shooter, and that's crazy to me. So
nice.
Get into it for that. It's fun.
Sounds good. All right, moving on. Next one to talk about is called Super Beat Sports, developed and published by Harmonix. It released November 14th on the Switch. Again, for $14.99, when an intergalactic crew of sports-loving aliens challenges you and your friends to a music-infused pentathlon, there's only one thing to do. Grab the nearest garden gnome and take the field. Super Beat Sports is a collection of five sports-themed minigames with a twist. Everything is musical. That means you'll need to swing, volley, and score to the music in order to come out on top. Pernell, what did you think of this one?
Well, I was initially disappointed when I realized that the review code wasn't for Super Beef Sports, but I was quickly dissuaded and calmed down once I got the actual Super Beat Sports game and gave it a play. This game is not very complicated, and that's not a bad thing, honestly. There's five different modes, and they're all related to different types of sports, basically baseball, golf, volleyball, wall ball, and Pong or Windjammers type gameplay, however you want to describe it. And each one has a different gimmick / take on how to time your sports. So the baseball game is five lanes or so, and there's aliens. There's aliens on the other side, and they're throwing balls at you. Each alien has a different rhythm and gimmick to how they throw the ball, and you have to ultimately hit the ball back on the beat. And at the end of that mode, there's like an alien boss, like pitcher, who's throwing balls down the line for you to hit, and they have like weird patterns you got to kind of connect with. And all of this is to the rhythm of the songs that you choose. There are about 9 tiers on that mode. That was the one I played the most, which is why I actually know how many tiers there are. But there's 9 tiers, and each tier has about 5 songs on it. And each mode a song has a regular version and a pro version, which is just the same song with an increased difficulty curve.
Yeah.
It's honestly a fun game. I enjoyed every bit of that component. The volleyball one, I think, may well be my favorite one, though, because it is sound patterns. So whereas the other one where it's like the guy go meep and throw the ball and you have to hit it, this one is more like, it might be three or so aliens at the top bopping the ball at different rhythms, and then eventually they're going to send it down to you. So you're trying to hear the rhythm to know which alien is going to be the one that shoots the ball to me to hit, and you're kind of keeping up on the pace with that. And it's honestly, again, another fun mode, and each one is multiple songs for each. And to my understanding, at least, none of the songs repeat between modes. So, you know, Little Slugger, the song, will not appear in, you know, the golf or the volleyball minigame. Golf is another one where, in this case, you get one rhythm play where it plays the whole thing kind of like Simon. And then after that, you have to actually go through the same motion. But what you're trying to do is feed golf balls to the aliens on 3 different islands. And you only get 2 chances to get it right before you screw up the hole. So that's kind of an interesting component, too, because, again, whereas the other ones are more like, here, do it. And this one's more like, catch the rhythm and do it. This one is memorize the rhythm and then enact the rhythm on your side. Then there is the wall ball component, which is actually the last 2 modes are specifically versus modes. They're not, you know, individual tracks or sets of tracks. So the wall ball one is where you'll have 2 players at the bottom of the screen, and you hit one player hits the ball up to one of the aliens that are crouched on platforms, and that alien will send it back to the other player, and then it has to be repeated over and over again. There are multiple types of aliens similar to the baseball game that are at the top of the screen, and they have different patterns for how they respond to the ball. And you have to know which alien the ball is being hit to, so that you know how to respond when the ball comes back to you. After you hit a certain alien a certain number of times, he'll get dizzy and then die, because holy crap, why? And then when that happens, the alien might become either a new alien, which has a new, you know, property, or he'll become a power-up that can affect the gameplay, even down to the unfortunate bomb, where if the next player hits the bomb, they instantly die. Oh, I'm sorry. They don't die in this game. They just have an accident. And then the last mode is actually the strangest one, I think. It plays like kind of like Windjammers or Pong, but there are some subtle differences to it. So one hand, you can only really aim where the ball's going to go if you do a spike. And what that is, like, you catch the ball, you bunt it upwards, and then you have to time the ball landing on the ground to whack it while you're aiming the direction you want it to go. And you're trying to get it through the other player's gate. There are also aliens that are in somewhere on different areas of the map where if you hit the ball to the alien, it kind of like is a signal booster where the alien can hold onto the ball and you can re-aim the shot and fire it again, either quickly or slowly. So there are a lot of weird mechanics in this thing that will make it so it's not just a simple Pong clone. It's Harmonix's take on Rhythm Clone or Rhythm Pong. And it's actually, I played that one the most in versus mode, which I actually got to play with some friends over Thanksgiving. And most of the earlier modes in the game, they're the same thing, but what they change is that whereas the original player mode for example, the baseball game is you're affected by every alien. In multiplayer, there's like another player in the board and there's a different color that can be represented by the aliens. The red player only hits the balls thrown by the red aliens and the blue player only hits the balls thrown by the blue aliens. And when you get to more complicated areas in the game, that can get crazy because you have the giant alien throwing overhand balls, the other alien throwing speed balls, and you're all trying to jump over each other and change lanes to hit your proper ball and stay on the beat. It gets corny in a good way. It's honestly a lot of fun. We had a great time playing it both in single player and multiplayer, but I do feel like this game is not one that's meant to be played like, say, other Harmonix games, like, say, Rock Band, where you'll have a marathon play session. We play for 5 hours. Man, I'm rocked out, bro. Nah, this game is more like, all right, let's have like a quick sit down, play like maybe 10 minutes, a couple songs, have some fun. And to use a board gaming term, it is a light filler game. So, you start up, play a couple rounds, put it down, play something else. maybe come back and play a little bit more later as part of your multiplayer game shuffle or even your single player game shuffle. You get home from work, you just want to bop a couple balls down the lane and see if you can get some good scores on some songs, and you're content. Oh, and speaking of scores, there are rankings on each one of these things too, ranging from the typical bronze, silver, gold, and then platinum. And depending on your score on each level, you'll gain experience points, which when you get to certain levels, you unlock items. And they don't affect the gameplay. They're purely cosmetic and used to edit to make your personal game sports kid look a little different. So it's just cosmetic. You don't have to feel like, you know, you have to do it in order to succeed and do well. But let's be blunt. You want platinums and you're failing. That's
true.
That's how it works. That's how it goes. But I do like the fact that this game is meant to be lighthearted. The aliens are happy-go-lucky. The kids are happy-go-lucky. And even when you're playing multiplayer and someone gets their butt stomped, the game is like, celebrate, everybody. You're all Super Beat Champs. And you can push the celebrate. Everybody's dancing. Even if you're in last place, it doesn't even matter. They just basically want you to have a good time to some great rhythms. And I feel as though they accomplished that goal.
Nice. So out of the five games, is there a standout one, like the best of the five?
For multiplayer, I think the wall ball game is the best because it gets pretty fast paced like actual wall ball. But you have aliens that with different effects and mechanics that wall ball traditional just doesn't bring to the table. Single player, my favorite was probably the volleyball one because I like having to memorize the rhythm and then catch it at the right spot and hit the ball back up.
Nice. Sounds good. So $15. What's your verdict on this one?
If you got a hanker for some rhythm making, I say go with the flow. But if you feel like you need to have some kind of run and gun, take them all down, take no prisoners bit, or a game that you're going to marathon, probably not so much. But come on, try something different. You have some fun with some Super Beat Sports. It's worth
true.
It.
I know it's clearly good for party games. Do single players, should they check this one out as well, or should it just best with parties?
I primarily played a single player before taking it after Thanksgiving, and I liked it just fine. The nice. Multiplayer is just an added bonus.
Awesome. Sounds good. Next game to talk about, I'm going to do one called Kid Trip. Ooh. Developed and published by Four Horses. It released November 23rd on the Switch for $3.99. Kid Trip has crashed on a mysterious island, and now the local wildlife is out to ruin his day. Run and jump your way through 20 levels of intense platforming madness in this tough-as-nails platformer. Have you got what it takes to help Kid Trip escape? This is like a mix between a retro-styled platformer, pixel visuals, looks really good though, nice art style to it, and an auto runner, which I wasn't aware it was an auto runner style game when I went into it. So when I first started the game and my character was moving on his own, I was like, is my controller broken or, oh, no, this is an auto runner. And I was worried at first, but the more I played it, the more addicted to it I got, despite how fucking terrible I am at it. the stages in the game, they're not that long. They're maybe 30, 40 seconds for some of the longer stages. Some of the quicker ones you could do in about 20. You start with 10 lives to get as far as you can out of the 20 stages. The good news is once you lose your 10 lives, you can continue where you are. It's just you lose all your coins that you've earned, which whatever the, you know, you want to try beating the game before you go back and perfect the game and, you know, beat it without dying.
One thing I want to confirm though, so when you say 20 worlds, is it 20 worlds like say like 1-1 or is it 20 full state actual stages like 1 then 2 then 3?
There is 1-1 up to 1-5 and there's 4 total worlds, so it goes up to 4-5.
Okay.
So there's just 20 levels total.
Okay.
So again, it's not a very long game, but on the bright side, it's also not a very expensive game. And then on the one more side to it, you know, the third side of that coin, it's a difficult game. So it's going to keep you playing because, you know, it's, I guess one of the downsides to it is that it's a lot of trial and error. Like you're going to get through this section with some tricky jumps and, you know, three enemies that are waiting for you that you jump over, you shoot with your rock or whatever. And then right after that, after you've tried doing that 30 times and you finally beat it, the next area, you're going to make that jump and a spider is going to come and hit you. And you'd be like, you motherfucking spider.
So what a jackass.
It's always throwing things at you to throw you off your game. And every now and then you'll just have that one perfect run where you complete the stage. And, you know, if you're lucky, you get all the coins because this stage, there's no checkpoints in the levels. Once you start a stage, you've got to beat it or you start back at the beginning, which is, I guess it's a blessing that the stages are only like 30-ish seconds long, because they get tough, man. Like, even the description says it's a tough as nails platform. Like, this is a hard fucking game. It's cute and it looks like it's geared towards a younger audience, but it is tough, man. To keep you coming back, there are challenges of like the goal is to complete all the stages and get all the coins in each of the stages. You could go back and play the levels individually once you've completed one. You know, just go back to the main menu, select levels, and you could just run that level as many times as you want so you could see if you could do a run where you collect all the coins. And it felt great. The first couple of times I got a stage that I collected all the coins and I saw that gold medal. I'm like, yeah, I did it. I did something Vindication. Worthwhile.
Vindication.
And then the challenges, they're basically like a list of achievements where it's like complete world one, world two, world three, world four, collect all the coins in a stage, collect all the coins in every stage, beat the game without dying more than 10 times of like, so you don't continue.
Well, good luck.
There's some brutal ones in there, but you know that there's going to be people out there who could speed run this and beat it without dying at all, because there's sadistic people out there who are just really good. Controls, one button jumps, one button shoots. Technically, you could hit forward on the analog stick or the D-pad to make you move quicker, to speed you up in certain areas. It could help with some of the jumps. Jumping, you can tap the jump for a little hop. You could hold the button for a longer jump. That will probably come back and bite you on the ass a few times when you think you held the button long enough, but you just come up half an inch short and fall and die. Mm-hmm. This is actually one of those cool games that if you fall in the water, it's not a death sentence, because you could hop out of the water unless you sink too far. Then of course you die, but you could, that's one of the achievements too, is to fall in the water, but still complete the stage.
Cause that's what a pro would do.
Overall though, for $4, it's cheap enough that if you're looking for a nice platformer that's going to test your limits and keep you coming back and trying to beat it, $4, you can't go wrong. I'd say, fuck it, why not? Just grab it.
Just a fuck it, why not? Indeed. I've heard one over.
Grab it.
Yeah, $4. And think how many Switch games are out there that have inflated costs. And to see something for only $4, support that shit.
I hear that, man.
Indeed.
In fact, I'm gonna support that shit.
You bet. Are you downloading it right now?
Not right now, but I actually was looking at it earlier today, so it was actually kind of a coincidence that you did a review on it today.
Well, there you go. Now you know. Now you know.
If I didn't know, now I know.
Anyway, last game for our group right here to talk about is called Ginger Beyond the Crystal, developed by Drakkar Studio, published by Badland Games, released on November 17th on the Switch for $19.99. A world destroyed by a crystal explosion, a mysterious threat hanging over its inhabitants, and a goddess who created a hero. This is Beyond the Crystal. You're about to embark on an incredible adventure beyond the crystal. Are you ready? Chris Taylor, were you ready?
I was nowhere near ready. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so we got Ginger Beyond the Crystal. So this game, it's kind of weird.
Helpful. So, good start.
I guess if I could compare it to anything, it would be a combination of, there's a Super Nintendo game from way back in the day called Soul Blazer, right? You remember that, right?
Of course.
So, yeah, you go to a stage and, you know, you defeat enemy lairs, and when you step onto the lair after it's cleared, it rescues it kind of releases a person, or a plant, or a, you know, whatever, a sentient being from an overarching prison, that then you can go and interact with that person, and that kind of helps move the game along. And, you know, that kind of piggybacked off of a game called ActRaiser as well, which had you rebuild destroyed towns that were destroyed by the main bad guy. And again, you had to, you know, kind of save people and repopulate the world, essentially. And so this game actually kind of has that aspect to it. It's just all done in this sort of running around a sort of free world. I want to say it's not quite sandboxy, because the worlds aren't really all that big, and they're split up into different levels. I would actually kind of consider it to be sort of like a Mario 64 situation, or like a Mario Galaxy or Odyssey or whatever. It's like, it's large, but it's not all in the same place. Like, you have to go to different sections of everything.
Individual minor playground.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not a sandbox. It's a bunch of little sand buckets. I've heard that it's like 15 different levels in three different worlds. So like there's three different places for you to repopulate, which to me, that screams like long, like large amount of content, because just in this first world, I've put, you know, a few hours into it, and like, it's just nonstop. It's like I'm constantly rescuing people. And once you rescue the people, like the way that you do it is you go into the action segments of the game, and the map is actually done exactly like Skyrim, which I'm also playing, and I already mentioned like twice. But it literally has the two points and the line in the middle, and like when you're facing in the direction of your goal, it appears on the line, and so you can kind of follow the line and find the next thing to do, which is really good because the game is actually fairly confusing as far as like you just don't know where stuff is going to be. So you get into the action segments, which the action is just, it's real, real simple. Like, maybe you get more advanced weaponry later on, but like what you get is an item that it kind of, I didn't really understand what it was. It looks like a little drill, but maybe it's kind of like a little sword, but, either way, it's just kind of a punch. It's a short range weapon that you can punch enemies, or you can jump and stomp them. And the enemies are fairly simple at the beginning of the game anyway, so you get plenty of opportunities to sort of test it out. Plus, there's a tutorial section, so they kind of show you what to do. But in the action segments, when you come across a corrupted crystal, you jump into it, and once it opens up, then that puts... that basically puts more souls kind of in the pool, if you will. And then when you get to the big crystal in the middle of the world where you're rescuing everybody, you then actually rescue the people. Like you take all your whatevers that you've collected and put them into this other big crystal. And then the people pop out and like start talking to you and stuff. And then, you know, from there, every person that you rescue, or at least, it happens regularly enough that it feels like every person. It might not be every person, but they, then you get back into that central world where, you know, everybody's kind of readjusting to life in a ruined place that actually still looks really nice. Like this whole game has a very pleasant look to it. So there's no like, no sort of apocalyptic looking thing. It's just like, all the buildings are slightly burnt, so you have to rebuild them. And when you talk to people, like they'll tell you things like, "I want 3 apples," and then they're just
damn apples.
Yeah, and then you just run off to some other place in the town and like just follow the map and try and find some apples, which will be just then laying on the ground or something. And I was like, you know, so it had a weirdness to it. It's like it didn't really make any sense. Like somebody was like, you know, I rescued some people, and one of them was like, "I want 2 fishes." And so I was like, all right, I guess I better go find a body of water and find some fishes. And so I followed the map to where the fishes were. They were just floating in the air above the ground next to a tree.
Sky like, fishes.
Here are the fishes. And so it's that kind of thing. It's like it's not overly complicated, but there's so much to do that you kind of just wind up going back and trying to do everything. And, you know, your rewards, of course, you get like different materials, and with the materials, you can rebuild the buildings that were destroyed, in the towns, and you actually get to choose, what you want to build. So if you want to build like a smithing forge or something like that, and I suppose that's where you get your weapon improved, as long as you have the materials, you can then build that and then save the next thing that you want to build. Like, I don't know, a fruit shop or a fish flying school or something. You know, you just build those as you move along. And then, you know, once you're kind of done in that area, you can jump right back into the action areas and go get some more souls, go fight some more enemies. Sometimes the crystals will actually take you to a bonus level where you have to, jump around and do like platforming tricks and all this other cool stuff, like in order to get like a bonus or some materials or even like open up new areas and things like that. So lots and lots of exploration. It's this kind of the balance of the game seems to be between having really simple actions and really uncomplicated like missions and quests and things. Like, you know, there are very few puzzles per se. It's more or less following the map to the things, but then there's so much to do, and like you're so invested in like improving everything and rescuing all the people and like building all the buildings that you still wind up like, this is easily a game you can fall into and get trapped. I say trapped because that's how I describe like the Elder Scrolls experience. The aesthetic of the game is really interesting. It, to me, feels like it's geared towards the younger set. I never really ran across anything that was like necessarily adult in it. It's very much like you're a little alien looking guy, and it is a guy called Ginger. I was like, okay, whatever.
I was going to say, it is E-rated, and it is something that they developed with the intent of families playing together.
Mm-hmm.
So I would assume that there's nothing too risque in the game.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's nothing risque at all. It's just cute little alien creatures, you know, and they're all blue, and they're all like, you know, it's basically the Smurfs. And yeah, it's, I don't know about families playing together since it is pretty conclusively one player, but I can totally see like, you know, a kid playing it and the parent kind of helping out and being like, oh, follow the map, son.
Yeah,
all okay. Right. You're just running into a tree. All right. That's cool.
Give me the controller, son. You're
in 3 hours now. Come on.
Tardos, give me, I want to do it.
Yeah.
Got him raising a moron.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, it seems like for what you're paying in the game, you're more or less, you've got a lot of content. It seems like there's a lot of hours you can put into this game. I'm sure that it eventually, the difficulty curve goes up, maybe on the second or third world or something like that. I can totally see that happening. It's well made. Like I said, the aesthetics are cutesy. The music is, they call it epic. I call it more just like orchestral and kind of, whimsical. I would say it definitely has a feeling of whimsy to it, like fantastical stuff. And really the only, I think, hang up I might have had with it is that sometimes in that larger world area, when you're just dealing with villagers, like there's no enemies around and stuff, the sheer amount of stuff that's being generated at once does slow the action down a little bit. It's not a smooth 60 frame kind of game at certain points. That's about it on that.
So overall, $20, what is your verdict?
$20, I say definitely if you're looking for something, a nice sandboxy game to like for a younger person, or just if you personally just can't get enough, this is a good addition to your library. I think your hardcore adventure fans, like somebody who's like into Breath of the Wild or Mario Odyssey or Skyrim, like, you know, the people who are playing like the big budget ones, this one's not going to quite hit that level. But again, if you're
nostalgia point for Soul Blazer, like you described earlier, though.
Yeah, if you're into that idea of like, you know, rescuing people and then having them give you quests and like seeing, you know, trying to complete everything. Like, this game is, it does grab you. It's a hooky, like, engaging game. So it's just not, you know, the top shelf $60 thing that it seems to be trying to be in some ways.
But the most important thing in price, it is not.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's one third of the price. It's not one third of the game. So there you go.
That's a go good tagline.
There you go.
But Chris, Purnell, thank the both of you for coming on and taking care of these games and playing Portal Knights with me and all that other fun stuff. Got to do this more often. It's fun having the both of you on together.
Hooray.
It was a jam. I enjoyed it.
So who wants the final words to sum it up?
Go ahead, Purnell.
I don't know what to say. I'm hungry. I'm tired. I got tryptophan in my veins. It's cold.
It's just carbs.
It is true. It is just the carbs.
All right, and final game to talk about is called Black Mirror, developed by King Art Games, published by THQ Nordic. It released November 28th on Xbox One, PC, and PS4 for $39.99. When his father dies under mysterious circumstances, David Gordon is summoned to his family's ancestral home, Black Mirror House, to discuss his heritage. Soon he starts suffering from the same nightmarish visions that drove his father to end his own life. Enter the world of Black Mirror, where psychological distress and madness awaits. Our good friend Dark Mika covered this one, and this is what she has to say in her email review. Black Mirror is a third-person point-and-click puzzle game, possibly a reimagined version of a fairly old series of point-and-click games. It is. It's not based on the new TV show. It's the old stuff. You play as a young man who's just come to his ancestral home in Scotland from India, where he had been raised most of his life. He comes to this place because his father died there mysteriously, because, I mean, no death in a game like this is ever going to be non-mysterious. Just, you know, not going to happen. His father was obsessed with the family history and the occult, a hobby you don't share. The game follows your character through learning about his father's fate and trying to untangle it to understand it. It's a fairly short game, around 6 to 8 hours long if you figure out the puzzles fairly quickly, and most of them you probably will. There were two puzzles I couldn't figure out for the life of me. Sadly, unlike many newer point and clicks, there's no hint button, so you have to use your brain to figure out the puzzles, or trial and error, either way. Oh no, you have to think in a puzzle game. What are you going to do? The controls are clunky and generally just not very good, and made worse thanks to the mostly fixed cameras. And from what I've read, a mouse and keyboard is even worse than the already rather piss poor controller controls. Confusing. It's also sometimes poorly optimized, which causes characters and cutscenes to just stop requiring you to quit to just stop, comma, requiring you to quit to the main menu, then redo everything and hope it works this time. Which for me, each time I did that, it worked again. Yay. Wonder if that's like a memory leak or something. The puzzles, most of them are easy to figure out, but there are a couple, two, three, that even with a hint walkthrough from the devs themselves, some of the puzzles I couldn't figure out. And the devs already realized those puzzles were going to cause issues, so they provided the solution in the walkthrough. For those two, three puzzles, I honestly don't know how anyone's going to figure them out, because there's no followable logic to them, which is a stark contrast to the rest, which make perfect sense and are logical. That's all I could think of for negatives, though. The voice actors and music are both awesome. Some of the characters even have a healthy, heavy Scot accent, and even use Gaelic, which for me was amazing, as I love Gaelic. The character and environment design was terrific. The graphics are great. It's just nice and dark and gritty and just fucking beautiful. The story is really good, and you don't have to play the originals to understand this one, as it is a standalone. I think it's a complete reboot. The game isn't long, but it's long enough to be fun, and for some of those puzzles, you might be stuck on for an hour or more. There are some twists and turns in the story that even I, someone who plays, watches, and reads mystery stuff, didn't see coming. For $40, personally, I'd wait for a sale simply because it's not a very long game, but I also tend to wait till games are really cheap before I buy them, just as a personal habit. Well, you can't, you know, if you're a cheapskate, you can't use that to judge games. If you have money burning a hole in your pocket, though, totally get it. The story and voice acting are just superb, and that totally makes it worthy of a yes, go buy this from me. So if you are not a cheapskate like Dark Mika, sounds like a good one to grab. But we're going to take a quick break. Thanks again to Purnell and Chris for dropping by to chat. Going to listen to some Jeff Ball music, and then we're going to listen to Jeff Ball talk about Jeff Ball. So we'll be right back. Hugs. Bye. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for hanging around. My guest at this time, joining after, 3.5 years, Jeff Ball. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me again, even though it's been like way too long.
It has been way too long. The show's been kind of crazy since July of 2014, since you've been on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, life's been pretty crazy, but it's like, it's been crazy for me too. And like, it's just been progressing along. I mean, I'm living in LA, so it's a crazy town.
True. So for the people who don't know who Jeff Ball is, who Jeff Ball is?
I is a person and I matter.
So helpful.
Violinist. Okay. Yeah. So I'll actually tell you what you want to hear, which is I am a video game composer and a violinist who records on video games and cartoons and a bunch of other things. But, I just released the soundtrack for Tiny Barbarian DX, which is 3 hours of chiptunes, which you can listen to on Spotify or iTunes, and it's really good.
We actually recently covered the game on the show because it just released on the Switch a few weeks ago.
Oh, awesome.
We played some of the music on the show as well because, you know, it's you and I had to play your music. Yeah. What's the difference between the soundtrack release now and the songs that have been out there for how long?
Well, this game was kickstarted in like the end of 2012, I think.
it made it.
Yeah. Well, it's only like 3 people working on it, you know, mostly just 2 people. So it's a lot of work.
But I know, even back in 2014, when you were on, looking at the show notes, we played some music from Tiny Barbarian DX on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, it was episodic release, so the first episode was out, and I had released some of it on Bandcamp, I know that much, but, like, once we got a publisher, and I knew it was going to be, like, serious release on a Nintendo console, which is amazing, which is the first time I've ever had a game out on a Nintendo system that I picked for, and, I worked with my friend Sebastian, who does a bunch of stuff. He used to work for Louder, which is a music publishing thing, and then he's doing his own thing called Materia Collective, and he'll help you release stuff. He was the one who helped do Toby Fox's Undertale soundtrack release. So I was just like, yeah, help me do my thing, because it's 3 hours of music that I don't want to have to deal with. And I had already spent like hours and weeks and months just listening to it over and over and over, just trying to master it correctly so it all sounded consistent. So he helped me do all that, and then we released it on actual, like, we got it out on all the stores, and it was like the full compilation has even additional content that wasn't released in the games. So yeah,
I noticed that there was a special bonus track that was not included, and that was the Christmas remix that you did for my show.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, honestly, I could probably take every track from that game and make it Christmas. Tiny Barbarian Christmas compilation just for your show.
You should. I'm hoping to get some more Christmas music from you this year for the show.
Just like pull all the tracks on top of each other and put like one thing of sleigh bells on top of it, so it just sounds like ass.
What, you mean layer all of the actual song tracks on top of each other?
Yeah.
Oh my god, that would sound like hell.
Uh-huh. I've actually done this before though. On my SoundCloud, there's a few things where I took like all the tracks from Home Alone 2. And I stacked them on top of each other, and it makes this like weird Christmas in hell sound.
Oh my lord. I need to hear that now.
Yeah. I did the same thing for the ET soundtrack and, like Indiana Jones, and it was just all John Williams stuff.
So are you just sadistic? Is that the moral of this story?
I'm a scientist, okay? I like to think of myself as an experimenter. It just goes some in some dark ways, dark twisted corners sometimes.
That would be a fun way to just play the entire Tiny Barbarian DX soundtrack on the show. Like, I could hype it up. Yeah, we're going to play the entire soundtrack on the show. Then they get to the end. The interview ends. There's like, what the hell? There's 3 minutes left of the show. How? Oh, yeah, that's how he's going to play the whole thing at once.
You could even compress it down to be like 15 seconds. So it's just like, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, if I'm going to layer, how many songs are on the soundtrack? Like, I don't know.
76.
Jesus, that's a lot of songs. If I'm going to layer 76 songs on top of each other, why would you cut any of it out to speed it up?
Yeah, it's true.
And then when you get to the very end, you'll hear like the tail end of one song and you'll be like, ah, yeah, that was really nice.
The longest song, yeah.
Well, the credits theme is still going. I guess I can enjoy this for a little bit.
Right. Yeah, everything just kind of slowly fades out until it's just like an actual chiptune sound.
Oh, God. That's going to be my night tonight, just trying to load all of the files in Audacity and see if it sounds anywhere, anywhere near presentable for the show.
Well, good luck with that. Put some sleigh bells on it and call it good.
I don't have any way to put sleigh bells on it. I'm not a musician. What are you talking about?
Well, you just needed like a blank track of sleigh bells, right? Just rip something from YouTube or something.
But then, you know, you have to have it on time. But I guess that's when you have 76 songs, there isn't there really is no a time. Yeah. No.
Just like do machine gun sleigh bells, where the sleigh bells play so fast that it just sounds like a machine gun.
Air that, or we could do the best of both worlds and like start with all 76 songs, then like 30 seconds in, then kick in the sleigh bells.
There you go. Yeah.
It's like an extra treat if you've made it that far.
Here's your machine gun sleigh bells.
Oh, Jesus. So, yeah, it's been a few years since you've been on. What have you been up to in the past 3 years?
Was I doing Steven Universe stuff the last time that we talked? I don't even remember.
I have no clue.
Because Steven Universe, I think, came out in 2013, but I've been playing violin on that show since then. So, like, I even recorded some stuff in the last few weekends.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's really cool, actually, because I live pretty close to Burbank, so I can go and visit the people. I can actually see the show being made.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, and it's just been, like, I've been doing that. I've been playing violin on so many things. Like, I can't even keep track of my own credits. I played some stuff for Star Citizen when they released a thing at Gamescom this year. I'm doing some stuff for a VR game called Moss that's being scored by Jason Graves, who is the guy who did Dead Space.
Oh, wow.
But Moss is actually like a really sweet little VR game that's like the main character is this cute little mouse. So the music is actually really beautiful, and it's not like horror music at all. And when I heard it, I was like, wow, Jason Graves can actually write some decent stuff. This is amazing.
That's like the most backhanded compliment.
Wow, Jason, good job. You can write music. I didn't think that you could because I'd never heard it before. Yeah, no, he's a great guy. I saw him at GDC. I always go to GDC every year. And that's, you know, I've become sort of just the regular go-to violin dude for a lot of people just because of that. And I'll just sit down. There's like on the third floor of the Moscone Convention Center. That's where they usually do all the audio talks. So, and they just have some tables and chairs to the side, and I'll just sit there and I'll just wait for people to like walk up and be like, "Hey, it's Jeff." And I'll be like, "It's me and it's you." And, and then they'll sit down and we'll talk. And that's how I got working with Jason Graves again, because he just saw me.
I think that's actually how we met, but it wasn't at GDC. It was at MAGFest.
Yeah.
And you're just hanging out with people. It's like, "Hey, this is Jeff Ball." It's like, "Hey, I'm Joe." And then we were friends right away.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and you're a really good guy. So it's like really easy to be friends with you. I mean, I'm trying to tell the truth. I'm really, really trying. I'm just saying, you know, but we had some really good times. I really enjoyed hanging out at MAGFest. I haven't been going as much.
I was going to say, when the hell are you getting back to MAGFest? I haven't seen you in how
long.
I
know, but it's like I'm a West Coast guy, so...
You just talked about you're like a high roller working on like TV shows and video games. You can't fly out to the East Coast?
I need to. Yeah, you should. I mean, I could probably do it next year.
The only thing is it's
so hard to, it's like back when I went the first time, it was really easy to get a hotel and it was really easy to just, you know, not have to worry about where I was going to stay. But now it's like the hotels sell out instantly.
Well, like I might be able to help on that front.
Oh yeah.
me and Chris, former co-host who was the co-host your first time on, we have a room at MAGFest and, we're looking to fill it.
Really? Well, the last time that I was at MAGFest, I had to sleep in a closet on an air mattress. So if I can get a legit bed, I might go.
There you go, man.
Yeah.
And then think about it. Like if there's four people in there with two beds, you'd have to snuggle with someone.
I know. And I could like stare at people while they're sleeping. Cause that's the goal, isn't it? To go to MAGFest just so you can sleep in the same bed as a stranger and stare at them.
So that when they wake up, the first thing they see is just you on the edge of the bed staring at them like, hey.
Yeah, with really like glazed over bloodshot eyes because I haven't slept at all. Just good like morning. Staring.
It's so good that you're awake now.
I've been watching you for 7 hours.
I really like the part where you were sleeping.
You smell so good.
Yeah. You were breathing on me. And it smelled like you.
Oh, my wife would be thrilled.
I'm sure she would. I mean, I'm a really nice person. I'm just saying.
She's not going this year unless she changes her mind in the next month. So, I mean, fuck. Gloves are off, I guess.
Fuck indeed. No, we won't go that far.
Not with other people in the room.
Right. No, we'll find time. Like we can like shower together or something. Oh, God. I'll wash your back. I'm a nice person. I'm just trying to be helpful. It's MAGFest.
Yeah, know? Everyone's friends at MAGFest, so.
Right. Good friends.
Clearly, when you go to MAGFest and you need your backwash, just go into the game room and be like, hey guys, I need my backwashed. Yeah, guaranteed. There will be guys coming up like, hey.
Be like, hey, you know, I'm really good at backwashing. I was just backwashing, you know, the last 5 hours with, you know, I just left my door open and whoever wanted to come in, I just was like standing in the shower waiting for them.
just a sign in the hallway.
Yeah.
Free back scrubs. Right, well, fuck, right. I could use one right now.
I know. I should do a panel.
Be like,
how to properly wash.
Hello? This is where the backwashes are? Come on in. Exactly.
I mean, it's MAGFest. I mean, do you really expect any less?
No. No, I don't.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What do you think? Are you gonna try getting there in January?
I don't know. That's pretty soon. I need to consider, like, I'm actually looking for a better place to live right now. So I'm in a tiny, tiny little studio and it is not big enough for me working from home by myself. And I just got a really loud neighbor.
In what way? Like, because I've had loud neighbors where it's like the TV's up really loud. We had one neighbor where like 5 o'clock every morning and then sometime at night, like some kind of super, super loud, prayer chime would go off.
Ooh.
For like 2 straight minutes where it's just like, I'm like, oh man, really? Every day. Every day.
That is gross.
And then of course there's the loud neighbors who are just, you know, intimate loudly. So what kind of loud neighbor do you have?
Well, none of those actually, thankfully, but the loudness expresses itself in different ways. So this is LA and there's a lot of people that are trying to make it, you know? So this new loud neighbor, he's from Boston. I actually met him when I was sitting out by the pool. He came by and he was like smoking for a hot second. So, he said he was from Boston and he's this kind of younger dude who's really like bro-y, but he plays guitar and he sings. But the way he sings is just kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like 90s Christian music, but just like loud. And the other thing that he was doing, I don't remember what day it was. It was probably like Monday or something, but he had a friend over and they were trying to film something like YouTube type thing, I'm guessing. But it was there was another guy that was outside and he had his phone and he was filming himself and he would knock on the door really loud when my door is literally right next to his door. So it sounds like somebody's knocking on my door whenever they knock on that door. And then the guy inside would answer the door and he would just yell, "Hey-o!" Like probably 75 times over the course of the entire day they kept doing this. It's like, you have to have a good take by now, otherwise you are doing it wrong. This doesn't take more than 10 times.
Good lord. Hey-o!
Yeah.
Did they give you a link so you could check out what they're doing?
No, I don't even want to talk to him at this point. It's like they were so loud it was resonating across the courtyard. You know, you could hear it echoing. It's like, really? And then like I think it was probably midnight last night. He had his guitar out again and he was singing again, but it was just the same thing. It's like, and he's not singing in tune, and I hate that the most. It's like you are maintaining a really good sense like a pitch, like you're staying on one pitch and that's really good. It's just the wrong pitch. Can you do the right pitch, please?
Kumbaya, my lord. Kumbaya. Yeah.
I mean, I have my desk speakers. They're like legit studio monitors. I want to turn them around and just point them against the wall and turn on something like the Chicken Dance at 3 a.m. and really loud, you know?
I was going to say, if he's singing and playing guitar, why don't you just get out a violin and play along?
I know, I probably could. I mean, I've been playing violin. Violin is like, I have a cutoff though. I don't play past 10 because that's just nice. And that's the, you know, quote unquote curfew of the building. And so I respect that. But it's like, if you're doing shit at midnight, I need to, like, this is war. I mean, I'm staying up until 4 anyway, so it doesn't really matter, but still, it's like, shut up.
I mean, that seems like the perfect time to bust out some Devil Went Down to Georgia at midnight with an annoying neighbor.
The only problem is that other people have to hear it too, and it's not just like, if I just really want him to hear it and nobody else.
But if you finish and then like there's applause because you defeated him, that sounds like a win for everybody.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know.
Maybe he's like a boss battle that you have to complete.
My life is Undertale. Everybody in this building is really nice, though. There's some actual... It's pretty ridiculous. Living in the middle of LA, you wouldn't think, right, that there would be pretty ridiculous people. But there are. I'm just saying.
Shocking.
Yeah, it's so... It's like, what? There's a guy in my building who was the English dub voice for Rurouni Kenshin, the main character.
I don't know what that is.
That's an anime. Don't you know anything? God.
Dude, I'm not an anime guy.
Really?
Nah, okay. Not at all.
Do you play Overwatch?
A little.
Okay. Well, the guy who's, what is his name? Roadhog?
Oh my God. If Chris was on here, he'd shit himself because he's like the biggest Overwatch fan.
That guy is one of my neighbors, the good voice actor for him.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Who else? The guy above me built the, do you remember Mr. Freeze's gun from the Batman, whatever movie it was?
Oh yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. He built that gun. The guy above me. What else do you, he built all of the, buttons and knobs on the space shuttle or whatever capsule thing. Recreating the original in the Apollo 13 movie.
That's really good. I would probably lead off with Apollo 13 over Batman and Robin.
Yeah, okay, whatever. Some people, you know, it's just all about visual references, though. So, like, I don't know, Arnold Schwarzenegger in an ice suit holding a cool gun. That's what stands out to me, I guess. But he was also like touring. He'd built lighting and a bunch of stuff for like pyrotechnic stuff for like Britney Spears concerts and NSYNC and stuff. I don't know if you remember at one point there was a concert where it was like NSYNC flying over the audience or something.
Oh God.
And he built all the rigging for that and made sure they didn't die.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah. This guy is just this unassuming guy that lives above me and he's like older. He's like, not Vietnam. He's a war guy. He did war stuff.
Interesting.
For, like helicopter stuff. Yeah.
So there is a nice mixture of people in your building, huh?
Yeah, it's weird, but it's cool. I like living here. And, you know, I can just go out and talk to them. They're my neighbors. So I just go out and sit by the pool and they show up.
I like how you just keep dropping the pool. Like, it's, I know, right? 30 degrees for me.
I have a pool and it's like warm and I'm like outside in shorts.
You asshole.
It's actually like kind of a heat wave. Yesterday, I think it was in the 90s. It's stupid.
We had a high of 41 today.
Oh.
That was the high.
That's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Yeah, so that's where things are going for me right now.
Well, at least you have cats, right?
True. When I get cold, I could just, you know, stitch them together and cover myself with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Kitten blanket.
That's what you need. My mom, I'm from Alaska originally, so I know what cold is, you know? My mom would always say, there's no such thing as bad weather, just wrong clothes. So true. All you need is a kitten blanket stitched together out of, you know, the fur of all of your kittens or cats, and then you're good.
True. And then I've said in the past, like, I would rather be cold than hot, because when you're cold, you could, you know, get a sweater, get a blanket, snuggle up. When you're hot, you can only take so much off before you get arrested.
Yeah, and you get really wet. When you're hot, you know what I mean?
So sticky and moist and sweaty.
All those like juices coming out of your skin. Just like, do we really need this?
Sounds so attractive when you put it that way.
Thanks, evolution. I know this helps when I'm like outside running or something, but who does that? I'm in LA. We just drive.
I mean, I drive everywhere, too, in Pennsylvania, but that's because I'm fat and lazy.
But that's okay. I mean, there are the diehard people that will go out in, like, sub-zero temperatures and run, and it's like, do you want frostbite?
Yeah, I forget where it was, but somewhere local around here was having some kind of charity run, and it was in, like, I don't know, the high 20s, low 30s when it happened. And there's guys in shorts and a headband like, yeah, I like it when it's brisk out. And then, you know, it keeps the blood flowing. And I really enjoy this kind of weather. And I'm sitting in the house with the blanket on like, you fucking moron.
It reminds me of Calvin and Hobbes' dad. You remember? Did you read Calvin and Hobbes?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, Calvin and Hobbes' dad would always go like ride bikes in the snow.
The Sunday funnies are not the same without Calvin and Hobbes and the Far Side, that's for sure.
Yeah, I want to get all those books again just so I can have them, because that stuff is still golden. There's many good little nuggets of stuff, because when you're a kid and reading that, you're like, you're just laughing at it because it's funny, and you don't really get the political references, but they're everywhere, and it's like parenting stuff and all this. It's really good.
There was someone on Reddit just posted a Far Side comic. It was like, I didn't get this joke when I was younger. And I opened the comic and I read it, and it was a chicken in a bar with a bunch of cows.
Yeah.
And like the caption below it was like, you know, whatever the chicken's name, looked around and didn't notice any other chickens there, not realizing this was a hay bar.
Oh.
Like, I never would have gotten that as a kid.
Yeah.
But that, oh, you know, God. I'm sitting there, you know, 36 years old on Reddit going like, that is pretty good.
It's amazing. Yeah.
And then of course,
sure all the cows were looking like, what is he doing?
Of course, the comment section devolved into people making a hay version of the Electric Six song Gay Bar, which obviously.
That's amazing.
Because that is the internet that we are these days.
I approve. The internet does some good things sometimes. Not all the time.
Hopefully it could stick that way with where the political climate is going and the dipshits at the FCC. I know on Facebook and on Twitter, you are very outspoken politically. I try to avoid a lot of politics on this show just because it's so fucking depressing what's going on. But
For me, it's mostly I just have really conservative family and I really want them to see the other side from maybe somebody who they can trust a little bit. That's the problem. When people watch the news or they get their news from whatever source they choose, they're not actually getting the whole picture. And it's just all of this stuff about it's tribalism. That's my favorite thing. Like, it's not my favorite thing, but that's my favorite word and psychological concept because it's so prevalent everywhere. This aspect of like fandom for any TV show or cartoon or video game or whatever. Fandom is a tribal thing, and this sort of like, okay, this is going to some deep shit. Are you ready for this?
Bring it on.
Okay. I grew up religious. I grew up Seventh-day Adventist, and I went to like Adventist schools, like elementary school and high school. My graduating class was 52 kids.
Wow.
And it's all, the same things that I see from that environment when I left are happening in the world now more prevalently just because people have more access to other people who agree with them through the internet. So what ends up happening is there used to be a lot of people that weren't really informed. And so they were just like their base concept was I should just be nice to people, you know, and that's cool. And then once fandoms start getting, you know, more popular and like the political climate started shifting where things are more separate and, you know, party based. People just, they'll get stuck in these groups. And then what happens is it becomes like base level survival instinct that is totally useless now because we don't need it, but we're like, superimposing it onto this concept of like social concept, which just like, so, you know, when we were tribe people living how many thousands of years ago, you needed to be in a group to survive because your chances of survival were better in a group. And so if you didn't have ideas that lined up with the group, they would kick you out. But if you changed your ideas to line up with the group, then you were in the group and then you could stay in the group and that was safer. So the idea was, hey, I don't want to be dead or eaten by some lion somewhere. So I'm going to change my ideas and join this group and then it'll be fine. And so now what you have is all these people clamoring to be in the center of groups because the center of groups is really where the most safety, quote unquote, is. But really all you're doing is just polarizing your entire being into, you know, tunneling into the middle of this thing. And really it's like, so say there's somebody outside of that. Say you have two opposing sides. The thing about this concept is that there's always an opposing side that they try to push against to make it feel better that they're like going towards this group. So if you're in the middle, like I try to not really have any fandoms. I like video games and I like anime, but I don't really have an emotional attachment to them like some people do. Like, I'm not going to go cosplaying. I'm not going to, you know, whatever. So I kind of sit outside of groups. And then the thing about it is that I've noticed is if you sit outside a group and you say something that sounds like it's outside of the group, the people in that group will try to push you to the other side. And then if you say the other thing to them, if you say the same thing to them, they'll try to push you into the other group. So it's like this constant battle. So yeah. Anyway, I don't know where I've been talking a lot. Where was I going with this?
I don't know. I'm just having fun listening.
But yeah, no, you were talking about political climate, but yeah. So the party structure and divide, like I was pretty sure that all this was going to happen. The only problem was is that I couldn't convince anybody that it was going to happen because they are too stuck in their little groups. They won't get out because it feels like it's dangerous.
No.
And that danger feeling is like this old survival instinct. And so anyway, I've been going to therapy a lot and it's teaching me a lot. That's all.
I've tried doing that in the past and every therapist experience I've had has been awful. So I kind of just gave up and now I just do a show and, I bullshit on here and that gives me stress relief, I guess. I don't know.
That's good.
That and weed.
Well, I mean, it might not be addressing the base issues, but at least it's doing something, right?
Keeps me off the corner.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got really lucky. I got a good therapist. I started therapy like four. It was the beginning of 2014. So however many years that is, math. I was super depressed. Like going back to the actual topic of the show, which was kind of like Tiny Barbarian. I went through a huge depression during the course of writing this whole soundtrack. The first episode was kind of like, oh, I'm happy. I just moved to LA and I'm, you know, exploring new things and everything's great. And then episode two was, I just went through the worst breakup ever. And now my ex is my neighbor and I have to deal with that. And
ouch.
I'm going to have to pull myself out of bed, laying in bed for a month and write a soundtrack.
Oh, man.
Every track that I wrote in that episode, I hated it. Just because it felt so gross to write happy music. And then after that, I ended up getting a therapist. And then like episode 3 and 4 kind of happened a while after that. But it was kind of like on the start of the upswing. But eventually my ex, who was my neighbor, dated somebody else and they moved to Mexico. So that like gave me some relief for a while. But now they live like somewhere close by and I don't know where, but I don't really care as much anymore.
At least the not caring part is there. That's the important part.
Yeah. But the thing about it was, is like, they did the art for my first episode, Tiny Barbarian soundtrack, when that first came out. And what I really wanted to do and what I did was after the breakup, I took all that stuff out and, I like, because I think I only had it on a few places. Like it was maybe on iTunes and Bandcamp. So I removed it and then I had Michael Stearns do the art for the first episode. He did the art for all of the stuff. The programmer, creator of the game, did all the art for the album releases.
That's so really it cool.
Was consistent. Yeah, he's really good actually. He did, I don't know what version you got, but on the physical release it comes with a manual. And all the art and stuff for the manual was done by him too.
That's really cool. Yeah, we ended up getting it digital for the show, but every time I see it in stores, it's like everything Nicholas does with like It'll Do, Tiny Barbarian, all of their physical editions are just awesome because they give you something with it.
Yeah, it makes it worth it.
Yeah, you know? Binding of Isaac had like the stickers and a manual with it.
Yeah, totally. It's I really like that aspect too. And just like it's this going back to like the early Nintendo days where when you got the box was cool too. And the manual was like psyching you up for the game. And once you get into the game doesn't tell you what to do. It's all in the manual. You read the manual first and then you learn kind of the story. And I mean, that's what it was like on the very first Zelda. I feel like whenever people play Zelda now, they're like, this game sucks because it doesn't tell you where to go and what to do. It's like, read the manual. It's all there. It tells you how to get to the first dungeon.
It's just games have changed so much since then. Everything just holds your hand so much more these days.
Yeah. And it's kind of sad because all that stuff really does take away from the immersion of it. Like, if I want to play a game, I would just want to dive into it. Don't hold my hand. Just let me go.
Unless there's a manual, then you read that.
Yeah, but it's like the manual is something, it feels like it's not part of the game. It feels like, it's your, you know, list of, it's like your guidelines. It's like a strategy guide.
It's like an instruction manual.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, let me try to find some other way to describe it.
It's a manual of instructions on how to play the game and what the game is about.
Yeah, but there's something.
I miss manuals. God damn.
They are really cool, right? It makes it feel like, even just the act of like not having your system hooked up to the internet and having a physical thing that you put in the game, and it's like way more intimate. You feel more connected to it.
Plus, shit, I used to read those on the drive home from the store. Like, ooh, I just got Kid Icarus on Game Boy. Let me read the manual on the drive home.
Yeah.
And then I'll get car sick and I'll throw up all over that manual.
Gotta love that. I mean,
indeed.
Vomit-soaked manuals. Yeah.
To my credit, I've never thrown up on a manual.
Oh, that's good.
Get that out of the way. That was an embellishment for comedic purposes.
I mean, you could have fooled me. I mean, it seems like vomit is a part of your life these days.
Sometimes it really is.
All
the
those
joy
cats.
Of cats.
Exactly.
The best is when they'll overeat because, you know, good Lord, they haven't eaten in like 6 hours. So, of course, they need food more than anything else. So they'll just eat and eat and eat and eat and eat. And then they'll throw up and then they'll come over to you because they're hungry again and they want more food.
Yep.
You little shit.
Yeah,
oh, man.
Poor cats.
Any pets for you?
No, I mean, I had one growing up, but pets kind of weren't really too, but it was complicated because we'd always go back and forth to Alaska. So, like, we had one cat, and that cat was an outdoor cat, and that cat would actually take care of itself when we were gone for 3 months.
Nice.
Yeah, it was like our house was surrounded by 3 acres of farm, and there was just, you know, gophers and field mice and pheasants and just whatever. And this cat would catch them all. It was like all black and 15 pounds of muscle.
How many times would you open the door and just see a dead animal on the doorstep waiting for you?
It would happen. It would happen quite a bit. And it would sometimes be like this giant bird. It's like, what is this? Why are you doing this to us?
Getting you dinner. That's the cat looking out for you.
Yeah, that's true.
That is love. That is true love from a pet.
Yeah. But I think that's the last pet I ever had. I mean, I was like, this was like second grade.
Wow.
So, but I can't, like, I could have a pet here, but I just don't want to deal with the cost and the responsibility and the potential for all of my expensive equipment to get eaten.
If you get a goldfish, fish isn't going to eat your violin.
Yeah, but even then, it's like, I don't have to worry about it. I just want to, like, I want my apartment to be about me. It's my little goldfish bowl.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So you've been composing a lot of stuff. Have you been playing much? What kind of games have you been playing lately?
I've been playing Zelda Breath of the Wild. And that's pretty much it at this point, just because that game is so good. It sucks you in. And I actually have a really nice big TV and I pull it close to my face so I can just like feel like it's almost VR, you know? And, it's just, I love games like that where you just run around and explore. So like I played at least 280 hours of Skyrim. I still have to play Fallout 4. I think that's what I'm going to do next. Cause I played when Fallout 4 came out, I decided I haven't played New Vegas and I've heard it's really good and I have to play New Vegas. So I did that.
Nice.
And I wanted to wait for more mods to come out cause I want to, you know, buff the graphics on it. But yeah, New Vegas is really good. I don't know if you've played New Vegas.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
On the 360. Fallout 3 and New Vegas were like two games that really helped me get into first-person shooters.
Oh, cool.
Because when I was younger, first-person games would give me motion sickness.
And, oh, really?
Between the Fallout games and the Borderlands series, they helped me ease into first-person games.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm glad you overcame that nausea so you just won't vomit everywhere.
Very true. That running theme. Every now and then, you know, a certain game will, you know, tick the right boxes and make me feel kind of queasy. I still think one of the funniest games to give me motion sickness in recent years was Disney Infinity.
What?
Yeah. Of all games, fucking Disney Infinity.
All those Disney characters, though, I totally understand.
Oh, man. So you mentioned Skyrim. Are you planning on grabbing that for the Switch?
I don't know. Honestly, I've heard that Skyrim has VR now, and I kind of want to try that.
Mm.
But I don't have a VR setup, so I'm thinking, like, when I move and I have a little bit more space, I might try to get a VR rig, because I really want to try legit VR stuff. I don't know if it'll make me sick. I think I'll be okay, but, yeah, I'm really into the VR thing. I just haven't had time to try it. And my apartment is just too small. Like, if I turn around, it's like my bed is, I can almost reach it.
I enjoyed my time. I had a PlayStation VR for a little over a year, and then it broke, and then it was after a year. So Sony was like, oh, tough shit. Go buy a new one.
Oh.
Which just reaffirms my hatred for Sony on so many levels. But I really enjoyed what I did with it, and I'm really hoping that in the next year or so we'll see Microsoft bring out some kind of VR solution on the Xbox One, because I would love to see VR done console-wise with something as powerful as the Kinect instead of something as awful and shitty as the $60 PlayStation camera that does nothing worthwhile at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. But didn't they, like, stop making Kinect?
They did, yeah. But yeah. I would hope that if they're going to do VR on
maybe they're on just Xbox One, that they're going to repurpose it.
That's what I hear, is that they're done manufacturing the Kinect itself, but they're not done with the tech, because they still use a lot of the tech in, like, HoloLens, stuff like that.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So I could definitely see them repurposing what's there and incorporating it into whatever VR solution that Microsoft comes up with.
Yeah, because I mean, classic Microsoft, they come up with everything way behind, but maybe it'll be good.
Could be.
I've been eyeing the HTC Vive or whatever Valve has, because I think that those are pretty good, but what I'm honestly waiting for is I'm waiting for VR to get a little bit more next gen, because the first gen is a little bit clunky still. Like, it's really heavy and the graphics aren't super good yet. The resolution, I mean.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can put it on, you can still see pixels. And so it's like, I want to
get that screen door effect.
Yeah, that's not a big fan of the screen door.
The worst for me when playing PSVR games was when they would have a black screen, but instead of being like a pure black screen, like the monitors just shut off or whatever, it's like that lit up black,
and
with the screen door effect on it, and with the lenses, I don't know if they were, you know, if the pixel pattern was different between the two, but it would just fuck with my head if I had my eyes open. I would either have to close one eye or just close them both until something appeared on the screens.
Yeah, because it's like, it's hard to know where to focus. Probably. Yeah.
It's trippy, though. It really is.
Yeah. Like, VR at this point is like real life wearing a fencing mask.
First, like, time I heard it compared to fencing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those fencing masks are basically just screen that you wear on your face.
True.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It makes sense, though. I don't know how anybody can do fencing, just because, like, how are you supposed to, you know, sword fight with a screen on your face?
I guess you get used to it after so long.
I guess.
I don't know. You really liked Breath of the Wild. Have you not given Odyssey a try yet?
I'm a one game at a time person. So Odyssey will happen. I'll get there. But at this point, I'm just like immersed in Breath of the Wild. And I'm pretty much done with it, but I just haven't actually beaten the final boss, just because I want to keep the dream alive, you know.
Just keep exploring.
I want Zelda to keep working for it.
You gotta find all those Korok seeds, right?
That's right. There's only 900, right?
Only. But yeah, it seems the general consensus of everyone I've talked to is that Mario Odyssey did for the Mario franchise what Breath of the Wild did for Zelda. And that
yeah.
it just, the open style to the game, it's not as wide open as Breath of the Wild, obviously, because it's still like world based, but just the yeah. sense of freedom and the feeling that you can go where you want, do what you want. It's not nearly as structured as previous Mario games, and it's incredible.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I'm definitely going to get it. I mean, I've seen some people playing it on Twitch, and I've been like, ooh, that looks cool. Ooh, I just got spoilers, whatever. but yeah, no, overall, it looks like they really tied in pretty much. It's like it's homages to pretty much every Mario game, seems no. like.
So. Especially in the outfits that you could get in the game. There's some cool shit yeah. in there. And then, of course, Skyrim on the Switch. I think if you're a Skyrim fan, having it on the go and the mm-hmm. fact that you can get a Master Sword in the game is just incredible.
That is pretty cool. Though, I mean, I've played so much of that game. If I started it over again, like, I'm the type of person that when I play through the game, I pretty much remember most of it. So, if I play it again, it's just like, oh yeah, this again. Oh yeah, this again. Oh yeah, I did that once. Oh yeah.
I don't know. When I'm going through it, I'm like, ooh, this again. Ooh, this again.
I guess I could play it a totally different way, because, I mean, when I played it the first time, like my long play game, I kind of messed the story up in a weird way, and I ended up going with the Imperials, I guess. And then it got to the place where you had to like sit everybody down, and I did that. And I tried to be neutral through the whole thing, but it just didn't work. Mm. But yeah, I could just try the game from the other angle and play all those story points.
One of these days, I keep telling myself I'm going to play a game like Fallout or Skyrim and just be like pure evil the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
And then
you should do that with New Vegas. That would be really cool.
I try every game. I'm like, oh, I'm doing an evil playthrough. And I'll be like, oh, but this person's kind of nice. Well, I won't be evil to this person. And it's like, oh, well, this guy's, oh, this that's a sad story. I don't want to. As soon as you're nice to one person, it ends. It's got to be like an all or nothing when you're an evil yeah. asshole in a game.
yeah, I understand that.
There is
I mean, I've tried to do stuff like that too, but after a while, it just gets really tiring. It's like, oh, I have to be mean to you? Fine.
I have to wipe out another village?
I know you're just trying to find, you know, whatever, your husband or whatever, but bye, I guess.
Or of course the curse with Fallout and Skyrim is like animals can detect yeah. you as well. So it's like you could slaughter yeah. an entire town in their sleep, but a chicken saw you. So you're still a wanted yeah. man. That fucking
chicken.
You have
to kill all the chickens. I just think it's funny in Skyrim when you kill a chicken and the guards come up to you and be like, what are you doing?
getting meat? Like, that's
yeah,
what chickens are.
It's a chicken.
That's my brother-in-law. That was my brother-in-law, you son of a bitch.
That chicken took an arrow in the knee. Fighting dragons, how dare you?
I want, because I know they mod the shit out of games on mm-hmm. PC, and now there's some limited mods on console. I wonder if there's one that you can just be a chicken.
I think, I don't know, that would be hilarious, but I think what they should do is take Skyrim and turn all the characters into chickens.
Yeah.
Then it could be called Chicken Rim. The world is now chickens.
Oh my God. That would be pretty fantastic.
That would be.
Oh man. Well, I know we've been chatting for a while. I feel like we didn't cover anything worthwhile at all, which well, to me is the mark of a good chat.
Worthwhile.
I don't know.
We could talk more about politics, I guess.
I'm sure our listeners love the politics stuff.
They're going to get to that part of the episode and they're going to be like, why am I watching
fucking
this show?
Fucking legit pie, fucking dipshit Trump, fucking asshole.
Yeah, exactly.
Then again, we have to enjoy being able to say that while we're still legally allowed to.
Yeah,
because, you know, it's only a matter of time before they strike down all these laws, and any kind of word against the almighty Trump is sentenced to death, shit like that.
Yeah.
We're going to turn into North Korea.
For him.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. I need all the support I can get.
my grandmother voted for him, which put a noticeable strain on things. Yeah, and then pretty sure my mom did too, although she likes to be like, you don't know who I voted for. I never told you who I voted for.
Yeah.
Well, given all the shit he's done now, I don't think you're going to admit to anything anymore.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's like, I'll ask my dad and I'll be just like, you voted for Trump, right? And he'll be like, I didn't vote for Trump. I voted against Hillary.
Oh, Christ.
It's like, that's the same thing.
I still love the fact that everything they bitched about Hillary doing, they are now doing themselves.
Yeah.
What about Hillary's emails? What about her fucking emails? Jesus, shut up.
Yeah, they're all using unsecured private email servers now. Ugh.
I love that Jimmy Kimmel did one of his like man on the street interview things, asking people in public, like, do you want to see Hillary impeached?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like, yeah, she should be impeached for like everything she's done with like her emails and Benghazi. And the very last guy was like, wait, did you say impeached? She can't be impeached. It's like, you're the smart one.
Right. Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Americans are stupid.
Yeah, that's why I feel really bad about everything. Just because I live here and I'm so smart. I mean, just look at me. I'm not. Yeah, you are. Don't lie. I live in LA though, so my inner Valley girl comes out sometimes. I don't know if you've noticed.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. It's tragic.
But, but before we wrap everything up, was there anything else you want to talk about with Tiny Barbarian or any other plugs that you want to get in there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really cool game. I think everybody kind of played Cuphead. It's like, imagine Cuphead, but a retro game, and it's co-op, and it does all the cool things, and we had a lot of fun. It's a really hard game, but we had a lot of fun making it, and the music's really good, because I wrote it, and, you know. The whole thing about there is twists in that game that you will not expect. You'll play the game, and you'll be like, oh, this is the barbarian game where you save the chick. Well, you just play the game. It goes some pretty crazy places. There's a lot of, like, we kept a very tight lip about episode 4. So, it's fun. You just gotta play it. Yeah.
And
the co-op is really fun too.
And where can people get the soundtrack? You should probably whore that out a little bit.
Yeah, it's on Bandcamp. If you search, for Tiny Barbarian DX on Bandcamp. Or it's on Spotify, or it's on iTunes, or Apple Music, or wherever you can get digital music. But Bandcamp is probably the easiest because most people use that. So, and I get the most money out of it. So do that.
Yeah. So jeffbaldap.bandcamp.com.
Yeah.
Any but plans for a CD
release?
On
Spotify, that's, you know, if it does really well, maybe. There's been a person who like sent me emails about doing, records of it.
Ooh.
And I was like, 3 hours of music on records? It's like, this might be kind of expensive.
You might have to just do like a greatest hits on vinyl or like just the Christmas versions.
Yeah. And I was just kind of like, yeah, Christmas, Tiny Barbarian Christmas. But yeah, I'm just waiting for it to, like, the game is kind of expensive if you're just doing the digital. If you do the physical release, I think it's worth it. But I'm just waiting for it to get a little cheaper so more people will get it. And then, you know, if you use Spotify and you stream the music, it's really good because then it builds up and gets on people's playlists. So, you know, do that too. And it's honestly, if you listen to the soundtrack, it's really good workout music. So just
nice
future reference. Maybe not yoga, maybe something a little bit more active, but yeah.
Well, I don't work out, so I wouldn't know.
That's fine. You can just, like, mental workout, right? Just think that you're doing it.
Sure, we'll go with that. We'll go.
just turn it on and like get a laser pointer, make your cats kick out.
Now I'm sold on that. Well, Jeff, it is always a pleasure having you on the show. You got to come back again soon, and preferably before 2022.
Well, just let me know whenever you want to have me. I mean, I'm pretty available, and I am always happy to talk to you because you're super fun and I really like the show. So,
well, then get to MAGFest.
Yeah, I need to do that too. Oh my God. Jeff, there's so many things to do.
Do you have any final words to end this episode of the show?
Always brush your teeth. I don't know. I mean, I know that's pretty generic, but it is actually a good idea to brush your teeth.
It is.
We'll be right back.